Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In the weeks when the nation focused on the future and the fate of one Terry Schiavo, there were more than two dozen U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq. Four soldiers have died there in the last 2 days, and 140 more have been wounded. Well, the war might have slipped somewhat in the headlines, but it remains every bit as real and as dangerous and as controversial as ever. The debate over America's strategy is a simple one. Are U.S. soldiers obliged to stay and see Iraq through a peaceful transition to democracy? Or has this country done enough? Is it now time to bring America's troops home? Simple question. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. In this hour, we'll hear two sides of the argument from two people who have earned the right to their opinions. Paul Rykoff is with the New York National Guard. He served as first lieutenant with both infantry and armored divisions in Baghdad. When he came back to America, he founded Operation Truth. It's an organization set up to give a voice to soldiers and vets. Lance Corporal Mike Hoffman is a Marine. He fought in both Tikrit and Baghdad. He's a founder of the organization Iraqi Veterans Against the War. They are both here with me in the studio, and it's good to have you both here.
Thank you very much, sir. Pleasure to be here.
Paul, let me start with you if I can, because when I look back, it is 2 years. It's 2 years this week since that statue of Saddam Hussein came down in central Baghdad. I was just thinking about that as I was getting ready for the program. But you look at the debates we've had. It's over weapons of mass destruction and the war for oil and Abu Ghraib and all the other things that were a part of the political debate over the war. Can we boil it now down to that question? Is it time for America to leave, or is it now the time for America to stay? Is that an appropriate question to ask at this point?
I think it's always an appropriate question to ask, and I served on the ground for almost a year, and I think the thing that really sticks with me is it's an evolving discussion. I think you're right. I think there are different points along the road that we have to look to for benchmarks or tipping points, but it's also a continuing conversation that we need to analyze and understand. And I think what I really want to emphasize is that it's important to include the positions of the people who've been on the ground, people like Mike and myself, who were really, in this 2 years, still absent from the dialogue in this country. I think that's what really should surprise people and bother people, that you hear from talking heads and you hear from four-star generals who served in past wars and you hear from policy wonks who were sitting behind desks in Washington while Mike and I were in Iraq. And I think the people who are on the ground, especially the lower enlisted and the junior officers, have been totally and completely eliminated from the dialogue in this country.
So what would the soldiers you represent say to that question? Is it time to leave or is it time to stay?
Well, I think what we see in our organization is that people are split. It depends on when you were there and what you saw, and I think that most of us think that there's still work to be done, that we do have a moral obligation to the Iraqi people to try to see it through as best as possible. Not to say there haven't been problems, not to say that the rationale for war wasn't flawed, because it was, but we're there now, and the question is, how do we make lemonade out of the lemons, and how do we try to salvage what we can from this situation, and what do we owe the Iraqi people? And most of the guys who've come back really feel that we owe seeing it through to the point where they're ready for us to leave.
Mike Hoffman, you're thinking it's time to go.
Yes, I am. I hear what Paul's saying. We owe a huge responsibility to the people of Iraq. What we've done to that country, what we've done to the people of Iraq, but I've been there. The other members of Iraq Veterans Against the War have been there, and we've seen that the military aren't the people to repay it. Now, I served 4.5 years in the active duty Marines. In that time, I learned how to wage war and how to kill. I didn't learn how to rebuild an electric plant. I didn't learn how to repair a water system. I didn't learn how to hold free elections and how to set up a democratic government. The people of Iraq know how to do that. And the biggest obstacle to them doing that is the military occupation. That's the root cause of the violence that's stopping the rebuilding efforts. And I'm not saying we just pull out and let them be and let them do what they see fit. I'm saying that when we do pull out, we turn to them and say, what do you need from us to rebuild? If they say they need $40 million to rebuild the water treatment plant in a particular town, we give them $40
million. But Mike, what if they say, you can't leave, we don't have the Iraqi security forces to keep peace in our country, you have to stay?
They're not saying that, though. If they didn't want us to be there, they wouldn't be attacking us. We're hearing in the media that these attacks are being led by foreign militants, that it's Al-Qaeda and all these people coming in from Syria and Lebanon and, you know, and from Iran coming in and attacking us. It's not true. If that was true, Abu Ghraib and the other prisons in Iraq would be filled with foreign fighters, and they're not. They're filled with Iraqis. It's the Iraqis that are fighting us, so it's obviously the Iraqis who don't want us there.
Well, I think an important thing to understand is that a percentage of the Iraqis are fighting us. And to say that because a percentage of the Iraqis are fighting us mean that all the Iraqis are against us would be like saying everybody in this country loves George Bush. I don't think it's really an accurate understanding of the way the population feels. There is a segment of the population that wants us there, that wants us there until the security situation is stabilized enough for us to leave. The Kurdish region in the north is an incredible example of success, stability, and a point where maybe we're more ready to move out of that region than, say, the Sunni Triangle. But I think now that we have a newly elected Iraqi government, they're starting to take the reins of their own political process. They can determine when that time is. They've got a voice now. When they turn to us and say, America, we've had enough, thank you, goodbye, we should leave. But until that point comes, I think we owe them seeing through what we started.
Well, I think one thing we have to remember is that Paul mentioned Kurdistan. We have to understand why Kurdistan has been successful. Kurdistan has basically been operating as an independent country since the first Gulf War. You know, we established a no-fly zone over there. Saddam Hussein withdrew almost all of his units from out of that area. So really, when that war started, we dropped some airborne units in, and really the Kurds took care of most of the work there. You know, they already had an independent government set up. They already had a well-trained military there. One of our members just came back from northern Iraq. He was telling me stories of Kurdish military academies. They've got armor units. They have artillery set up. They're ready to really, they are their own country at this point.
But can't you use that same part of the argument, though, Mike, to say that it's clear in central Iraq none of those same facilities exist? That kind of security doesn't exist. And you know, using the old Pottery Barn line, having gone in and broken everything, there is an obligation to stay and make sure that at least somebody can guard, provide some security when American soldiers leave. I mean, I know this is not a new argument for you, but...
Right. Well, you got to look at the fact that one of the reasons it is so calm in northern Iraq is because there's so few American troops there. Because just like I said, when we walked in there, they already had their own security and their own government taken care of. If you look down in central and southern Iraq, there are so many Americans there. That's the root cause of the violence. And what we all said before, what we were saying before that... That's a small segment actually fighting the Americans. Well, if you look at history, if you look at what a guerrilla war is, what an insurgency is, no insurgency can really fight without the support of the people. Not everyone is holding a weapon and shooting at the Americans. But without the support of the people, they can't be successful. What happened in Abu Ghraib really was a coordinated raid against that facility. Could not have happened if the people weren't complacent in it.
And Paul, I mean, the point here that Mike is making, that there needs to be some support there. If you sort of page back through all the attacks that have taken place in Iraq over the past few weeks, most of them focus in on a taxi loaded with explosives that someone tried to get up close to a U.S. convoy. So what about the argument that if you take the Stars and Stripes out of that country, you take the reason for the insurgency away at the same time?
I think that they haven't only been attacking American forces. They've also been attacking Iraqi forces. They've been attacking Iraqi police and the new Iraqi army. So I don't think that's entirely true. They're not only attacking American forces. They're attacking stabilizing forces. And I think the Americans right now are the bulk of that. But I think an important thing to understand is that there's this idea in this country that this is going to be over quick. And that's what got us into this mess to begin with. We rushed into this war, and I think that was a mistake. And I also think to rush out would be a mistake. Nobody's happy about the way this thing has gone, especially with the rise of the insurgency. And I think it's clear that the geniuses in Washington made some major miscalculations. But I think we need to understand that this is not going to be quick, and it's not going to be easy. And I'm not telling you I'm here to walk the line that, that President Bush is going to push out.
No, I got that.
But at the same time, we've talked to hundreds of members. And if people go to our website, OperationTruth.com, they'll hear stories, they'll see pictures, they'll see videos of people who say, there's an old Iraqi saying that all the fingers on your hand are not the same. And I think the same is true in Iraq right now. There is no easy answer. There is no silver bullet. And the issues on the ground are not black and white.
I should just make a mention to our listeners that we have links to both optruth.org and Iraqi Veterans Against the War on our website. We're at theconnection.org. And I, you know, the interesting thing about this is I'm wondering if in your own work, both of you, you're hearing a public that is engaged with this debate right now. Are people drifting away from this, not wanting to talk about it?
People aren't wanting to talk about it. I think that people don't want to talk about it because they want to view America as this great thing that makes the, you know, that does no wrong, that everything we do is right. And really, this was, God, probably the most flawed venture we've gone into since Vietnam. And people don't want to shatter that. They don't want to think about that. They realize that they've been complacent in things like this. But we need to have people talk about this. If people don't talk about this, if people don't realize the reality of the situation there, we're not going to advance. This past summer, I had a chance to meet Daniel Ellsberg, and one thing I really took from that meeting is that A democracy cannot function in secrecy. People need to be informed of what's going on around them if this country's going to work.
Do you think then, Paul, maybe it's just an exhaustion, people thinking, oh, we had all these arguments prior to the election and nothing changed, so let's talk about something else?
No, I think it's a detachment. And I think this is where Mike and I will agree on. And we'll agree on a lot of subjects. And I think it's important that we have this dialogue. And I credit you. And this is, you know, it's important to have this discussion, to bring Iraq vets home from all political spectrums and have us duke it out to some extent, because we've been on the ground and we understand the nuances. But this American public is almost entirely detached from this war. And I think that's very, very unusual. It's like nothing else we've seen in our country's history. There is a smaller percentage of the American population serving in Iraq than any other war in our country's history going back to the Spanish-American War. People don't know soldiers and Marines and airmen. They're like an other. They're a professional army that live on military bases, and now the public has started to feel it because we've dipped into the National Guard and the reserves, which make up about 40% of the force structure in Iraq. But most people are living life uninterrupted. Most people haven't personally felt this war. They're not at your job, they're not on your bus, and you don't know somebody, so you haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to somebody like me and Mike and understand what's really going on over there. And I think that's incredibly important. That's what both of our organizations are trying to do, is shake this country and say, hey, there's a war going on, and it's a lot more important than what color pajamas Michael Jackson wore to trial last week.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Are you one of those people who is guilty of a certain amount of detachment from this war? Are you looking forward to this kind of conversation? Should this kind of conversation be going on, not just on radio programs, but in coffee shops right across the country? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Your thoughts about the war, where it is in the headlines right now, where it is in your own consciousness. Are people talking about this? Are they talking about it as much as they should? 1-800-423-TALK. Paul Rykoff is with me. He's founder of Operation Truth. It's a nonpartisan veterans advocacy organization. And Mike Hoffman is a founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War, an organization of soldiers working for an immediate pullout from Iraq. We're going to go to Baghdad now. Ed Wong is joining us on the line from there. Ed is a reporter for the New York Times who is based there now. Ed, good of you to join us.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. There was news just within the past week that this long protracted political stalemate broke with the appointment of a speaker for the Iraq parliament. What does that mean in terms of Iraqis finally grabbing hold of their own political affairs?
Actually, I think it's inaccurate to characterize the stalemate as having broken yet. The appointment of the speaker was a fairly insignificant appointment in terms of the job of the speaker, and it wasn't a very hot-button issue. There was around a week where the parties couldn't agree on who it would be, but then they did appoint it. The real test will come tomorrow when the parties try and appoint the president and the two vice presidents, because that's a much more critical appointment. Now, if they can agree on who those people should be and actually make that appointment, then that will be a fairly significant move, and that will mean that the process of installing the government is well underway. If they can't do that, then that means we'll still be in a stalemate, and then further questions will be raised both among Iraqis and among Americans, I think, about the future of democracy here.
What's your guess, Ed? Are they going to be able to do this tomorrow?
Well, at the last meeting, where they did appoint the Speaker of the Assembly, they said that they were going to set for themselves a firm deadline of Wednesday for making that appointment. Now, what we heard earlier today from some of our sources is that that one of the contentious points is who will be the Sunni Arab who will serve as vice president, and there are several contenders right now for that position, and I think that might be put up for a vote tomorrow at the Assembly.
You were listening in to the conversation I was having just before the break with Paul and Mike. And so the point that I wanted to hear from you on, Ed, is at what point is it reasonable to say The Iraqis, in fact, are taking control of their own political affairs and using that as one of the stepping stones towards the country taking care of its own security at the same time. Are we even close to that yet?
I know that a lot of people have seen this protracted negotiation process as a pessimistic sign. They say that if these parties can't agree on even starting the first step of installing government, then how long will it take for them to write a constitution, for them to actually run the government, and then hold the next set of elections? So I'm not sure how much of what's gone on in the last 10 weeks will be a barometer for what goes on in the future. I think what we need to do is we need to wait to see the government that they do install and how that government starts to assume power and exercise power. Once we start seeing that, then I think we're going to start, we can start gauging to what level the Iraqis are going to start running a lot of their own affairs. And then the other important questions will remain, which is how they go about writing the permanent constitution and whether there's broad agreement on the themes in that document, and then how well the security forces fare against the insurgency.
Sounds like months.
At least months. I think that a lot of the senior American officials who are speaking out about this these days say there won't be any serious attempt or significant attempt at pulling down troops until sometime next year at the earliest. And then, of course, none of them want to give a timetable. They all say it's conditional, depending on how the Iraqi security forces perform, and that's still a big question.
All right, Ed, I want to thank you for your time. Stay safe there.
Great, thanks a lot.
Ed Wong, a reporter for the New York Times based in Baghdad. To both of you, Paul, Mike, are the soldiers in Iraq paying attention to that? We know that, you know, people are making their political calculations here because they can get a morning paper every day. But I'm just wondering if what you hear from the people who are still in country, are they connected to this and watching the kind of thing that Ed's describing to us? Paul, do you want to start?
Well, I think they are connected, probably more so than just about anyone outside the Iraqi civilians. And I think they're watching it with great attention. What's great about the evolution of technology in this war is that now we can find out what the soldiers think. There are blogs directly from Iraq where soldiers can put their two cents in, and our website has been able to, you know, try to bring those together and get emails from the field to give people a better sense of where the pulse of the troops are. So I think they're watching it very closely, and at the same time, there's a part of them that doesn't really, not to say they don't care, but they're focused on what we'd call in the military the 5-meter target, which is getting their butts home in one piece. Mm-hmm. They're not over there for George Bush when it comes down to it. They're not over there for the flag even. They're there for their buddies to the left and the right of them, and to make sure they get home to their families. And that's what I think people really don't understand about the soldier's mindset. It really is, to some extent, about survival and getting yourself home alive. And that is what motivates them day to day, taking care of their friends, their squad, their platoon. And they do have, you know, a lot of compassion and empathy, and they want the Iraqi people to succeed. But they also, you know, have a bullseye on their butt just about every day.
Okay, but Mike, this 5-meter target, I mean, at some point, there's got to be someone who's got a calendar on the wall saying, when do we get home, you know?
Yeah, I mean, guys are counting days every single time when they're there. I think it was one of the worst things that's happening right now is that guys are counting days, and all of a sudden it's, well, you're getting a 6-month extension. You know, I think it's one of the worst things. I mean, when I was there, we didn't even know when we were coming home during the invasion phase. But I think what Paul said is right. It's a war for survival, and that's probably one of the worst things out there. These guys are over there without a clear mission. They can see that this insurgency is building up around them. They don't have a clear date, a clear goal. And they're stuck in this horrible situation. Really, what we're looking at, and all these horrible things we see happening in Iraq, it's good people trying to adapt to a horrible situation. You know, warfare and combat, I look at it as the complete failing of humanity. It's really us at our absolute lowest. And when that happens, it's just like Paul said, it's survival. And people are going to do what they need to do to survive. And because of that, horrible things happen.
1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us this hour. Let's take a call from Louisville, Kentucky. Paul's on the line. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to premise my statement first by saying I come from a military family, and my father served in Vietnam as a volunteer, and not volunteered for military service, and I have the utmost respect for what these guys are having to go through and what they're doing over there. But now that I say that, I think there's an issue with our soldiers dying for the freedom of the Iraqis. I think that if you hand them freedom and they don't have to really spend the time working for it and making, and I guess, as in our situation in our revolution, really fighting for it and understanding how precious it is, we could be there for a very long time.
Paul?
Well, I think it's an interesting perspective, but we are by no means handing them their freedom. I mean, I served alongside Iraqi National Guard troops and Iraqi Free Army troops. As they took control of the situation, we would do what we call left seat, right seat rides, where I would be a platoon leader for my platoon of 38 guys, and it'd be an Iraqi platoon leader right alongside me. And I think there has been progress among the Iraqi security forces. I don't think it's anywhere near the progress that the Bush administration has touted, but they are taking casualties. They are paying a very severe price, and the civilians are paying a tremendous price.
But I think what Paul in Louisville is saying is that if the U.S. soldiers are to stay there indefinitely, you know, what is the end? Is it to hand a peaceful, well-governed country over to the Iraqis? And at what point do they need to, you know, go through the kind of fight and blood and sweat and tears that America did in the creation of this country?
And I think it's a progression, and I think they've started to assume it. You know, the percentage of Iraqis shedding blood is higher as right. We draw down. I think that's part of the process. I don't think it's going to be quick and easy, and I think most of the callers and people in this room understand that it is going to be a long fight, and it's not a quick fix. But the Iraqis are involved, and I don't think there's a sense among the American troops that we're necessarily giving them something they don't deserve. We have incredible respect for the Iraqi people, and we want them to succeed. And I think it's a big part of the American soldiers' mindset when they're there. That becomes our de facto mission. We're there not because of weapons of mass destruction. We know that's no longer an issue, but we're there now to try to help the Iraqi people succeed, and we want them to succeed.
Let me just go back to Paul in Louisville here. Are you saying that it's time for the American soldiers to leave, and now?
I believe that they need to go ahead and start pulling back. It's a tough thing because you run into a situation where the men and women who have died over there, you don't want what they fought for and died for to lose that. But at the same time, it's like an infant. Sometimes you got to step back and let them take some steps on their own, and maybe they will stumble, but you can't jump back in and pick them up every time. You got to let them work on it and build it and educate themselves.
Are you saying a timetable? Are you saying do it in 6 months, do it in 8 months? I'm not sure, Paul, what it is you're actually suggesting the Army do here.
Yeah, I think they should have a timetable right now. I think they should go ahead and say that we need to start pulling back, and they need to go ahead and replace those people that they're leaving with the Iraqi military.
Mike Hoffman, what do you think?
Well, I think there's a couple things here. First of all, in the state we're at now, as long as the Americans are there, the Iraqis are never going to be able to take control of what's going on there, because America is undoubtedly the most powerful fighting force in the world, and we can't control the situation in Iraq. So I'm going to expect the Iraqis to do it. Also, like I said before, the occupation is
the root
cause
your
of the
argument.
Violence.
That means everything's going to go to hell in a
handbasket? No, hold on. If you listen, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
The root cause of the majority of the violence is because the Americans are there. The Iraqi police and National Guard are targets because they're viewed as collaborators. When this occupation ends, they're no longer collaborators. They're Iraqis trying to maintain order. And that's going to change the whole way things are looked at there. I'm not going to say it's going to be nice. I'm not saying it's going to be pretty. But it's what we need to do to get this to move forward. Also, you know, what people...
And you're saying under those circumstances, then the Iraqi people would put their support behind the police and the Iraqi security forces if that didn't mean that they also had to be seen to be putting their support
exactly.
behind the Americans.
Exactly.
The
and what they're doing right now in Americans that we pull back into what's basically a force protection mode. We're sitting in stationary positions, not going out, not taking the initiative to patrol areas and help in defend and reconstruction projects, things like that. We're leaving up to the Iraqis. We're actually having our front gates of our bases manned by Iraqis, police, and National Guard, making them even larger targets.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call from Concord, Massachusetts. Mary is with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from your guests about how it makes the troops feel when people do express opposition to the war. I was opposed to this war, but I do have a son in the Marines, and I'm very, very supportive of the troops. And I think one of the big differences between this war and Vietnam is in Vietnam we were not able to separate the policy from the troops. And in this war we have been able to do that. You can be opposed to the policy,
right,
but support the troops. How does it make because a lot of us who are opposed to the war are told by people on the other side that we're not supporting the troops.
Well, let's start with Mike Hoffman on this one, because he is a Marine and he opposed the war even before he went over there, which didn't mean that he didn't go over. I don't know, Mike, talk to Mary here.
Well, I remember back in November of 2002, there were some small protests going on against the war, or before the war started, actually. And one of my friend's moms, who lived in New England, went out to one of the protests. He came back and said, man, my mom's out at an anti-war protest. She doesn't want us going into Iraq. And it's about a half dozen of us sitting around. We went, good for her. Because if you talk to anybody, nobody wants to go over there. We could pull tomorrow. And, you know, despite everything else, I don't think anybody's going to complain about not going or not having to go back to Iraq.
But it doesn't make the troops feel that there's less support for them and what they do because we don't believe in the cause.
No, because every time we go out there, we always say support the troops, bring them home. And not just bring them home, but bring them home and treat them the way they were supposed to be treated, that they get the benefits, that they get the education money, that all these things, and oh, above and beyond that, that they're not sent to war for a pack of lies.
Right.
Well, there's also two separate discussions. I think that there is the focus on foreign policy, which Mike's organization focuses on. He wants to bring the troops home. What we focus on instead is veterans advocacy and troops advocacy. We focus on trying to give people a tangible way to support the troops, because a dangerous part of that detachment that's going on in our culture is they don't understand how the troops and their families have been treated and how they've been affected. So they're also detached from the VA budget situation. The VA is underfunded by close to $1 billion for 2006. Over 40,000 troops have been affected by stop loss or the backdoor draft. The wounded and dead really haven't gotten much visibility in the national media. Who those people are, how their families are affected, hasn't been understood. The armor shortages and body armor problems that were, you know, highlighted when Secretary Rumsfeld was embarrassed publicly. There is a detachment on that side.
But what are you saying
to
Mary, though, about being opposed to the war?
There are two separate arguments, and I think most of us in uniform understand that the warriors are separate from the war, and I think the public now understands that as well. And that's a testament to the Vietnam veterans and that generation of protesters, because they've educated this public to separate them. And I think most of us who go halfway around the world to fight for this country or in uniform understand and respect the rights of people to protest. That's why we joined the military, to defend that right. And we understand it. And I think we respect their right to protest. And I was, when I left, half my friends in New York were protesting the war. And I was encouraged by that. There should be a full and open discussion. That's part of this country. It's our foundation. And I think it's encouraging. We should always be asking ourselves, is this war worth it? Are we happy with the way the course of things is going? And we need to hold our government officials accountable in all areas.
Mary, just back to you here on the point that both Paul and Mike were making a little bit earlier, that people are somewhat detached from the war at this point. It's one thing to be opposed to it. It's another thing to be actively opposed to it or speaking about it on a regular basis. Do you think that's fair criticism of the way people are looking at it?
Well, I do. And I think, you know, there's so many people that drive around with their support the troops things on their cars. I feel like coming up with a bumper sticker saying, would you give up your tax cut to get body armor for our troops, or for veterans benefits, or some of the veterans issues you're talking about? Would you give up your tax cut for that? So, you know, it's one thing to say you support them and then you can be detached. It doesn't affect you in any way at all. But yeah, I think if we were really engaged as a public more, that we would be much more vocal about those choices. Like,
let me just ask the gentleman in the studio with me here, Mary, how they see those little yellow magnets on the backs of cars. You've got to notice them.
It's a nice gesture, but I think supporting the troops is more than a magnet on your car. If you really want to support the troops, this is what Operation Truth is trying to do, give you a tangible way to support them. We like the magnets, but we'd much rather have health care for the 30% of National Guardsmen and reservists who don't have it. We'd much rather have armor on all our vehicles. We'd much rather have a fully funded Veterans Administration. And that's what we've tried to do, is give the American people a way to connect with those issues, because quite honestly, a lot of people don't know what to do. They want something to do. And we've gotten over 30,000 people in our support network who've united around these issues. So when we push a piece of legislation to them with three clicks of the mouse, they can support TRICARE or the health benefits for National Guardsmen and reservists, or increase in the armor capacity of our supply situation. So there is, I think, a definite initiative there. The people feel like they want to connect, but they don't know how.
And
I think it's important for us as veterans to show them how.
Do you think that people put that magnet on the back of their car and think about it, or put it there and forget about it?
Well, I've got a good friend who's a Vietnam veteran, was almost killed over in Vietnam. He was a Marine also. And whenever he sees those on the back of a car in a parking lot, he pulls them off and throws them away. Because they frustrate him, because he feels those things are stifling the discussion of this. because they've filled up this ultra-patriotism right now that says if you discuss the war in a critical light, you're against the troops. Kind of like the same thing that they're trying to portray it the same way it was in Vietnam, that you can't be against the war and supportive of the troops, and it really upsets him.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, your chance to join our conversation this hour about the war. Is it time for the soldiers to come home? Is it time we started talking about this again? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Paul Rykoff, first lieutenant in the Army National Guard, served as infantry platoon leader in the 3rd Infantry and 1st Armored Divisions, conducting combat operations in Baghdad, 2003-2004, founder of Operation Truth, a nonpartisan veterans advocacy organization. Mike Hoffman, Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps Artillery Battery, Romeo 5th Battalion, 10th Marines in Iraq as part of that initial invasion, working with an artillery battery on fire direction in 2003, founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Websites on our links to their websites on our website. We're at theconnection.org. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky for our next call. David's on the line. Hey, David.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'm a retired Vietnam veteran, and this war that we're in, at first I was in favor of it because I wanted to find, is there weapons of mass destruction and get rid of them? We don't need things like that floating around. But as it drags on and drags on, we need to give the Iraqi people all the support they need as far as material and say, okay, it's time to stand or fall.
You're saying it's time to pull the troops out, though, are you, David?
Absolutely.
I'm curious about how that decision could even happen now, because part of the conversation is that the debate in whatever quarter, David, and whoever you're listening to, has now been going on for so long. I'm wondering if people, politicians, ordinary characters, business people, have dug themselves in so far that nobody can even change their mind about this.
Our politicians are digging graves for our troops. And our Congress has demonstrated that it doesn't care about our troops by getting involved in things that really they don't need to be getting involved in. And I mean the Shibo situation. We did not need to get involved in that. That was none of the Americans' business. That was a family matter, and we should have stayed out of it. That time and effort spent on that should have been directed towards...
I'm wondering if you two were watching that and kind of shaking your heads going, my God, it's you know, the trial of Michael Jackson, and it's the national fascination with the case of one woman rather than a war that we're talking about.
It's a very convenient distraction on the anniversary of the war. There was tremendous coverage over the Shibo case and relatively no coverage on the war in Iraq. And I think, you know, the media is definitely at fault here as well. They have a very narrow focus, and they've drawn down their numbers significantly in Iraq, and the numbers that are there generally don't leave the compound. So
you mean journalists?
Number of journalists, yeah. Absolutely. So I think the American public has gotten a very narrow understanding of what's happened in Iraq, and the press has been, quite honestly, very lazy. And it's given the American public a very shallow understanding of what's going on the ground. And I think we all agree there needs to be a point when we do need to pull out. The question is, who's best suited to make that decision? And I think it needs to be a collaboration between, you know, our government, the Iraqi government. Let's come to an agreement and a timetable of when that is, because quite honestly, I haven't been in Iraq in a year, and I imagine the caller hasn't been there in a while, if ever. So we're really not on the ground, and we can't assess accurately the security situation and what point we are stable.
And Mike Hoffman, if you don't have people who are paying attention to the war, and you don't have politicians who are doing that, and the media is busy looking at other things, can that debate, can the debate over really what should happen next right now, will it take place?
Well, I think what we're talking about here, it goes back to the presidential elections. We had two candidates, one saying, well, I'm doing everything right, nothing has to change, and the other candidate, John Kerry, standing there saying, well, you're not doing everything right, but you got the basic idea down. You know, nobody was talking about immediate withdrawal. And if they were locked out of the debate.
And so because now, George Bush won the election, do you think that that has given him, legitimately, do you think it's given him the position to say, that was my position, stay the course, and we don't really have to reopen this again?
No, because nobody was talking about the war, really. You had George Bush pushing his position and John Kerry pushing his position, which actually, if you looked at it, really wasn't all that different on the war. The election was not about the war. And John Kerry, to me, was a huge disappointment in the election. Because what he said in the presidential debate, he should have said months before on Vietnam. I'm proud of my service in Vietnam. I'm proud of what he said after Vietnam, and history has proven me right. If he would have stood by that and stood by his comrades from VVAW during this election, we would be in a much different place right now.
I want to go back to our callers. Greenville, North Carolina. Bruce is on the line. Hey, Bruce.
Hey.
Thanks for calling.
Dick.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me on. You know, I'm listening to these guys. I'm a U.S. Marine. I'm 100% disabled from the first Gulf War. And I served, and I served proudly, and I'm real happy that I served. Now, I in my experience, what I've often run into with National Guard and serving along with regular Marine Corps individuals is that the National Guard has the opinion of the civilian-minded people for all intents and purposes. They are well-trained civilians, but the individual is still a civilian. He's a weekend warrior, for lack of a better
term. He's here with me. You talk to him. Talk to him directly. Okay.
Okay.
His name's Paul. Go ahead.
Okay, Paul. I see you all as a weekend warrior or highly trained civilian, for lack of a better terminology, which is why you all lack such thing known as quiet dignity. There are things. I'm a force reconnaissance, former force reconnaissance Marine. And maybe this is because we are a little bit, we are our high-speed unit that deals in yes or no, sir, three bags full. We understand what it means to take your orders, and we don't question our orders. You all being a civilian-minded individual, you come in from your weekend war, from your civilian job, you have a civilian mindset. I understand and appreciate your disagreement toward the war, but as hardcore Marines, we don't babble. We don't see if I can put a better word on this here.
You know, Bruce, I'm going to just
go against our leaders. We don't talk bad about our presidents. We don't talk bad about we talk amongst ourselves. It's kind of like we don't air our dirty laundry.
Quite honestly, I passionately disagree with you, and we are not. First of all, we're not an anti-war group. We're a veterans advocacy group. We're the first and largest Iraq war veterans group in the country, and we're fighting for our guys, and we're also fighting for guys like you who are disabled and dealing with the VA. This is the evolution of the veterans movement, and if you have a problem with that, I really can't understand why. George Washington once said, "When we assume the soldier, we didn't lay aside the citizen." Veterans have not only the right, but I would argue an obligation to be involved in this country's dialogue. And as for the weekend warriors comment, weekend warriors make up 42% of our force in Iraq right now. Weekend warriors are dying every day on the battlefields of Iraq. And I don't think that they are necessarily more or less involved in this conversation than the active duty. All the military is involved. Our membership is actually more active duty than it is National Guard and Reserve.
Bruce, back to you. Let's hear what you're thinking.
Okay, my thinking is I'm not understanding. I understand everything they've been battling about has been more political. I mean, they're talking about George Bush should have won, Al Gore should have won, I mean, this guy should have won. It's not. I mean, I thought this conversation was about a timetable as to force pulling out the war. Now, when I fought in the Marine Corps, we did not care about when we were going to get out. We cared about if we're going to make it to the next day, and that's as far as we're going. For the most portion, I didn't really. You know, I my political affiliation for the Marine Corps, and pretty much this was the Marine mentality. When I was growing up in the Marine Corps, we really didn't care who won this president. Because
Bruce, I'm going to bring Mike Hoffman in here because Mike is also a Marine and has been speaking out more vociferously against the war and against the politics behind it than Paul here.
Right. I actually served 4.5 years active duty in the Marine Corps, and you know, you're right. We followed orders. I didn't like this war, but I went anyway because, just like you were saying, my buddies were going, and I had to make sure they came home safe. I'm out now. I was discharged. I'm going to speak up for the guys who can't, because I hear exactly what you're saying. The guys in the military generally either don't or are afraid to speak up. So I'm going to speak up for them because I talk to them. I know who they are. A lot of my buddies from the Marines have joined Iraq Veterans Against the War. So I think we need to speak up to let the truth be known because, just like Paul said, as veterans after serving this war, we do have an obligation to speak on it because nobody else is.
Let's go to Buffalo, New York for our next call. Alice is on the line. Hi, Alice.
Hi. Thank you. I feel we shouldn't be arguing about the war now. We should be supporting the veterans and all, and I think we should be told blankly that we need this money and we should pay higher taxes to cover it.
How do you make that case, though, to this gang of politicians in Washington? Paul was saying earlier that you can't get them to address this, Alice.
That's a question. If I were 50 years younger, I think I'd be down there myself. But
am I right in guessing here, Alice, that you may have seen this kind of debate after the Second World War?
The Second World War, we as civilians, you might say, were very much involved in sacrifice, in saving tin can. We were part of it.
Right.
This war, we're outside of it. Yep. It's political, and our political views affect us. But I just think some politician, I think Kerry should have been able to do it, but he didn't. But tell the American people the truth, how much it costs, and that we do need to sacrifice a little, and the only way we can do it now is to pay more money to cover it.
I think you're exactly right, ma'am, and I think we can have that discussion, and we should have that discussion separate from the political discussion about whether or not we should have gone to war. We have to all agree that no matter how you feel about this war, we need to do a better job of taking care of the people who are fighting it. And as we have a professional army now for the first time in our country's modern history, or in their history, really, it affects the way people understand the war. They are detached because it's a professional army. They don't know them. They're not connected to them. And I think that's why veterans' issues, in part, are not a priority in this country. The president recently did a State of the Union address and didn't mention veterans' issues at all, because veterans' issues are not a priority for any side of the political forces in Washington, for the Democrats or the Republicans. We need to make veterans' issues a top priority. The recent budget is another indication. Veterans' hospitals around the country are being cut and slashed. 8 are going to have their services reduced or their doors closed. At the same time, 50,000 troops are coming back and seeking services at the VA. So everybody in this country should be absolutely appalled with the way veterans of all generations have been treated. And that's something we can unite the entire country around, regardless how they feel about this war.
Well, we keep going back to the idea of veterans' benefits, and veterans' benefits are incredibly important, but we need to realize that, you know, fixing veterans' benefits, it's like sticking your finger in the dike and the flood's still coming over top. As long as this war continues, we're going to be creating more and more disabled veterans, mm-hmm. physically and mentally. And we need to take a stance on this war. We need to do something about it, or else, you know, it's pretty much futile. I mean, I understand we need to treat them. I've been turned down by the VA for my own disability claims. And I realize that's incredibly important because these guys need the help. But at the same point, you know, we've got to take a stance on this war. We've got to do something about it. And the best stance, I believe, is to end this war, end the occupation, and bring the troops home.
1-800-423-8255 to Providence, Rhode Island. Next, Chris is with us. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Gordon. First of all, I'd like to say I think you have a wonderful topic today, and I love your show.
Thank you.
And the gentlemen on today are absolutely right. I myself, I'm a veteran of the Desert Storm of Gulf War I, and it seemed at that time we had an objective. We knew what we were looking for. The problem seems to me right now is that our objective was to find weapons of mass destruction, which we didn't find. The whole war was based on a lie. Our mission, as far as I'm concerned, is over. It's time to bring the troops home. And the paradox is we don't want to diminish or make the sacrifices of the troops who died over there any less valuable, but it really is time to bring our troops home. And my second question is...
Chris, can I just ask you one thing about that? I'm curious to know if you're surprised at all that that question, that debate's not taking place on a national stage in Washington right now.
Absolutely. I'm shocked that it's not taking place. And it's like the people have totally forgot that was the objective in the first place. And now we're stuck over there. Our troops are dying every day. They're coming home wounded and in worse shape every day. And we're trying to train the Iraqi security force. And I wonder, do they even know what they're being trained for? And it really is their turn to take hold of their country, take up their responsibility, and do the best they can with their country. We need to come home. We went over there with a very clear objective. The objective, unfortunately, was based on a lie. We couldn't carry it out because there were no weapons of mass destruction. In the first place, the war was a fallacy. It's
okay, we've covered some of that ground, and I'm going to let Mike Hoffman in here. Mike.
Right. Well, I think you're making a really good point here. I think the politicians up top, even though they're not admitting it, know just like in Vietnam, they can't win this war. In 1967, our government knew the Vietnam War could not be won. Instead of pulling out, we ended up with 58,000 dead Americans, over 2 million dead Vietnamese. We're doing the same thing here. If you look at what's going on, unfortunately, this is not a war we can win militarily. That's why we need to end this. Every single day, and you know what you're saying, you know, the sacrifices were in vain. What's the bigger mistake here? Sending more and more Americans to die in a war we can't win, or to pull out now and realize what our mistakes were?
And Paul, if someone were to come to you and say, I'm thinking of signing up, I can't decide if it's the right thing or not, what would you say to them?
We get this question a lot, and that's a long conversation. I think full disclosure is a term Mike used last night. I think that's an important part of the process. You shouldn't take the recruiter alone to be your sole source of information. You need to balance it against a vet, specifically a vet who's been to Iraq, because if any recruiter tells you you're not going, he's lying. But I think that, you know, Mike touches on the subject of Vietnam, and I think it's an important subject to look at for comparison and analysis, but I think it's not Vietnam. And I think we need to have an evolution of our thought process and understanding that this is not Vietnam. And there is a chance for success in Iraq. I really think there is. And I think a lot of people coming back from Iraq will say that there is a chance.
What is success in Iraq?
A fully stable Iraqi government with us leaving. I think that's what we all want. And I think that there is still a chance for that. And a lot of people coming back who've been on the ground will attest to that. It's not a lost cause. And I think there's a problem in this country that it appears as though people want it to fail. And they're not updating their conversation to reflect the progress that's been made. I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything's great, mm-hmm. but there has been progress made, especially the last few months with the elections and the lowest number of American casualties in 13 months. Whether or not that's sustainable, I don't know. But we have to evolve our dialogue to reflect the changes on the battlefield.
And Mike Hoffman, to someone who would say, you know, if we just pulled everything out now and left the Iraqis to their own devices, what does that say about the 1,500 people who have already died on that battlefield? Does that discredit them, or does that somehow... what's the word that I'm looking for? Disrespect the sacrifice that they and their families made?
Not at all. Last night, after the forum Paul and I had at Faneuil Hall, a mother came up to me. Her son served in Iraq with Force Recon. He had died over there, and she said, my son died in vain. She was literally in tears telling me her son died in vain. And I said, it won't be in vain if we learn our mistakes and get them home. And she said, you're right. That's what this is. This is learning from our mistakes, not making the same failings as Vietnam. I know people say this isn't Vietnam, but you know, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. This isn't the same war, but it's too damn close to ignore the lessons we learned in Vietnam.
Well, gentlemen, I both appreciate your time spent and the passion that you bring to this. It was great to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much, Dick. Appreciate it.
Paul Rykoff, First Lieutenant in Army National Guard and founder of Operation Truth. Corporal Mike Hoffman, Marine who fought in both the Crete and Baghdad, founder of Iraqi Veterans Against the War. We also talked briefly with Ed Wong, reporter for the New York Times in Baghdad. Again, if you'd like to know more information about the organizations represented by these two gentlemen, you can find links on our website. We're at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.